Two Fridays ago, I gave a talk at the annual Otago History Department conference entitled Dunedin's Flu Czar and Jiu-Jitsu Parson. It was about the Reverend Vincent Bryan King, a son of the vicarage here, who became Dunedin's and perhaps New Zealand's premier social worker priest in the interwar years. One of his big achievements was opening a mission house in Fallal Street in 1909, then a den of low-life iniquity. Police warnings about what was likely to happen as a result came true when local toughs invaded the mission house and smashed up the furniture. At this point, Vincent Bryan King felt obliged to demonstrate his skill at unarmed combat and in a series of dramatic encounters used his jiu-jitsu expertise to defeat a number of burly dockers and street thugs. This was all the more unusual that he was a thin, frail and bespectacled man of often ill health. One of his remarkable gifts was his ability to earn the respect and future cooperation of big blokes he had thrown into the street with judo holds. Oddly enough, the Dunedin City Mission, as it became known, closed in 1944 and never reopened, which makes Dunedin an exception, since most major New Zealand cities have Anglican city missions. They're popular with charity donors, and it's not hard to understand why. They stick to traditional basic social service provision for people at the bottom of the heap without getting involved in any controversial or avant-garde poverty-busting strategies that might frighten off the funders. They have well-oiled publicity and fundraising machines that ceaselessly broadcast their good deeds to the community. And most important of all, they're doing something that most people think is at the heart of what being a good person and a real Christian is all about. You could call this morning's gospel reading the City Mission Charter, because many people think that feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, taking care of the sick, visiting prisoners, and giving hospitality to strangers is a job description of a Christian. Do that and you will be saved. But is that what it is saying? Apparently not. The least of these refers to Christian missionaries, itinerant evangelists, and all those who spread the good news about Jesus in vulnerable circumstances. If a pagan or an unbeliever gives them hospitality, sustenance, or help of any kind for whatever reason, they have just radically improved their chances of salvation. So the focus is on those outside the Christian faith, how they will be judged. And judgment is what it's all about, because Jesus wants to make it abundantly clear that God will have the last word on every life. There will be a final reckoning, and apparently there'll be different judgment criteria for believers and unbelievers. For Christians, the yardstick will be, were you faithful to Christ? Did you do what you were asked to do in terms of the vocation and the mission that God gave you? Were you a faithful and fruitful disciple? We've just heard that those outsiders who come into contact with such Christians and to cooperate with them or show kindness to them, no matter how mixed their motives, will end up doing themselves a power of good in the salvation stakes. But that, of course, only applies to a small percentage of the human race. What about the generality of the human race who never met a Christian, who lived in a time and place where there were no Christians around, or who now live in one of those submerged, secularized parts of our Atlanticist world where the glimmer of gospel light never gets in? How will things stand with them in the great getting up morning? Since the war, the State of Israel has invented a new category of admired and esteemed outsiders, the righteous Gentile. These are the non-Jews who went out of their way at considerable personal risk and cost to themselves to rescue Jews from the Holocaust, people such as Oskar Schindler and Raoul Wallenberg. Are there then righteous pagans whom God will gather to himself in the life of the world to come because of their meritorious and kind deeds? In the 1960s, the theologian Karl Rahner, anticipating the considerable decline in church going that was about to begin, and much concerned with the spread of atheism, developed the concept of the anonymous Christian. In it, he argued, in the words of Eamon Conway, that even an atheist may possess Christianity implicitly. By implicit Christianity, Rahner means being in a state of grace and justification without being in contact with the implicit preaching of the gospel. If a person is attempting to live life honestly and selflessly and is caring and responsive to the needs of others, if this atheist is honestly trying to follow his conscience, then he has already implicitly accepted God. In other words, there are men and women of goodwill who are trying to live lives of authenticity, to live up to the horizons of their possibilities, who have not had the opportunity to encounter the Christian proclamation in an effective and healthy form, but who nonetheless have said yes to Christ without being able to do so in an explicit form. This is what could be called a disguised form of Christian acceptance. To his critics, who said that anonymous Christianity removed any need or incentive to belong to the life of the church, Rana replied that those who have had the opportunity to be invited into the life of the church and who have failed to take their spiritual responsibilities seriously have no excuse, cannot take refuge amongst the ranks of the anonymous Christians. The anonymous Christians are those who did not receive the invitation and who are probably completely unknown to the church and the church to them. God, however, is not unknown to them because he has presented himself to them in a way that they can appropriate. And they are those who have not buried their lives under a mountain of trivia and banality, insulating themselves off from any form of depth or existential challenge. Somehow or other, they have got the hang of being God's children without being given the instruction manual. Can we then relax knowing that good people will get into heaven anyway, even if they don't believe in the Christian God? There are many Christians who believe this, who would be pleased to put today's gospel reading end on end with Karl Rahner's notion of the anonymous Christian and leave the matter there. If you are one of them, then let me leave you with a couple of thought-provoking questions. What is love and what does it mean to be human? Secular people might think that love is a self-evident experiential reality and that it's something that human beings have within them. Christianity says that we love because God first loved us. He took the initiative and reached out to us with his love, not the other way around. And what is more, in doing so, God redefines what love is in a way that human beings wouldn't have thought of. It's not just a warm cuddle while watching a rosy sunset, but rather someone laying down their life for their friends. And if we ask what the yardstick is by which we measure what it is to be human, then Christians have to answer that Jesus Christ in his earthly life gives us, in a concrete and particular form, what a fully human life is. In him, the full weight of divine intelligence and love is expressed in a way that reveals what human beings were made to be as God's children, his friends and co-workers. Human beings are not autonomous subjects living lives of individual fulfillment, but are rather communitarian beings embedded in the truth that they were made to love God and each other in freedom. Once we've got our head around this, we can see it might not be enough to assume that loving our neighbour is the same thing as loving God and removes the need to love him. And it raises a disturbing prospect of what would happen to the human race if the possibility of loving God in an explicit form was removed from it. Karl Rahner expressed the fear that the human race might be, as he put it, evolving backwards, losing the religious instinct and the accompanying capacity to have a relationship with God. If the death of God happened in the experience of the human race, then this would result in the end of humanity as we now know it. This would happen because, cast adrift in this way, the human race would redefine what love is and what humanness is in ways that would distort and downgrade us radically. We would lose what really matters to us and in us. This, then, is why a flourishing Christian community needs to exist at the heart of every human society, so that in microcosm it can set the standard for what love is and humanness is. It is why spreading the good news about Jesus really matters. He has within him what the human race needs for its health and wholeness. Perhaps anonymous Christianity is a valid concept. Perhaps it is not. We will find out on the Day of Judgment. Meanwhile, there's no reason to rest on our oars in our efforts to make the church a vibrant and effective community. We are about the business of preventing the human race from evolving backwards. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.